The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested. Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. Every week, Josh will teach you ways to help manage risk and protect your retirement income in the new economy. The primary focus at Aptus Wealth is to provide flexible planning strategies that can efficiently achieve your long-term retirement goals.
Thank you so much for joining us. We want to start the show off by inviting you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. For those just joining us, you haven't heard of it yet. It's a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. All you have to do is schedule a 15-minute call with Josh, and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support our local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. Now, this works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up, and there is a limit of one per household. So let's get into the show. Let's start off with coronavirus. With the jobs lost because of the pandemic, how will this affect those that are currently retired, and how concerned should people be that aren't in retirement? They're still in their working years.
Let's start with the people who are still working, because there is some huge concern over whether or not jobs are coming back. A lot of people have been displaced from work. And the sad news, I hate to start the day off today with some bad news, Diane, but it doesn't look like those jobs are going to come back as quick as the market has. There's a lot of research that's done on this, and forecasts ultimately moving forward from almost all sources, and there's been many, many research studies done on this, it looks like jobs are not going to come back, at least not quickly. Matter of fact, I've seen estimates as long as 2027. It could take until 2027 for W-2 waged employees to completely recover, or at least it's going to be at a lower growth rate than it has been in the past. And even they go as far as to say 1099 INT forms are less reported. So what a 1099 INT form tracks is the interest that you receive, say, from a savings account or at the bank. And they're forecasting that those will continually decline until 2027, which embedded in that information, Diane, it gives me two kind of answers. One, if those are going down, people aren't saving as much, which means more people are probably out of work. But number two, that would indicate that interest rates are probably forecasted to remain low for the foreseeable future, because if you stay underneath a certain threshold, sometimes INT forms aren't even required. So people are not earning as much in savings accounts, and people are not as employed as much as they have been in the past, and forecasts don't look much better. So I think that the takeaway for workers is, unfortunately, it doesn't look like things are going to get better in any short period of time. Retirees is a different story, Diane. You know, as far as retirees go, you have people who are retired. They didn't lose their job. They already quit their job. They're retired. So their income sources haven't changed much. And I think I alluded earlier on that the stock market has rebounded rather quickly. So if you're retired and you have a pension and you have Social Security and you have investments, those investments should have rebounded by now and actually made money. Your job, your life really hasn't changed a lot. I think there's other constraints that have obviously affected your life in retirement, but income for most retirees hasn't been one of them. So that has not, the COVID crisis has not impacted the financial scenario or situation of retirees near as much as the worker.
The number to call is 614-364-7300. If you have questions for Josh, 614-364-7300. For the worker, is it a matter of people? I know pivoting has been used, or we've got to pivot. But in terms of the workforce, is it a matter of people pivoting their careers? And always when there's a down market, there's always opportunity in a different sector. Is there not?
There is, and I think there's some more challenges coming. And this has been talked about a little bit as we enter into this election, but not by everybody. We're entering into something that some people talk about as the third or fourth industrial revolution. And what they're talking about is, what is the impact of technology and artificial intelligence also going to be on the economy? Meaning, for example, there are millions and millions of people in the United States that drive long-haul trucks. And if, in fact, Tesla and the other folks of the world can come up with self-driving trucks that could hit that industry, what would that mean for that industry? But then let's extrapolate that out even further. Let's say you're a radiologist and you read x-rays for a living. Well, is artificial intelligence going to have the ability to read a large percentage of x-rays? And what will that do in the displacement of workers? So I think we have a lot of challenges that we're facing. And the word pivot comes to mind in a lot of different things. But I think you have to be somewhat open-minded and fluid and willing to constantly educate yourself to make yourself more usable in the workplace. You can't simply say, this has been my job, I'm going to start here and work here until the day I retire, because that's just not the way that the world has been working over the last couple decades. And it looks like that constant change is not only here to stay, but it's going to be accelerating. And insert something like COVID, which hopefully this is the last for a long time of pandemics, but it's really shone a light on that. And, you know, I think you have to be willing to, quote, pivot and educate yourself and be willing to open up to other areas of the marketplace.
And so with those jobs lost, there are going to be different growth in different areas at the same time.
I would say so. I mean, it's always been the case. The question will be, where will those jobs occur? And that's where the debate really exists. Because as technology comes into play, you know, if you would have said that, 30 years ago, you're going to be carrying around a little device in your hand that held, 98% of the world's information, you would say, get out of here. But how many jobs has technology created over the last 30 years that we couldn't even begin to dream up? So what will the future hold? I have no idea. But I know that it will be a lot different than it is today. And I know that in order to remain competitive and keep your wage growing consistently, you're going to have to make changes along with that. And that will include educating yourself, taking advantage of opportunities, not being stagnant, all the things that would have helped you over the last 30 years. So keep an open mind and keep moving forward.
If you'd like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion on how you're doing. In return, he'll give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. Josh, let's talk about health savings accounts. What are they, and do you encourage people to have one?
Health savings accounts are very common, number one. So it's important to know that they're common. If you have a 401k, there is a very, very good chance, probably a 75% chance that your employer has a health savings account available to you. Stats that I see is less than half of people actually use them, even when they're available. So it's important that we talk about what they are. It is just that. It's an account that you set aside money for health expenses. But there's really significant tax savings in doing so. So essentially, you put money into an account, much like an IRA. You put money in pre-tax, so it's before you're taxed on your wages. It grows tax-deferred. And then if you utilize those dollars for health-related expenses, and that's a very broad brushstroke, and you can look online and look up qualified health savings account expenditures, and it'll give you a whole list of items. But you can use those for health-related expenses completely tax-free. So it's almost like, if you remember from our previous conversations, Roth IRAs, you put in money after tax, but the great benefit is it grows tax-free and you pull the money out on a tax-free basis. Well, this is like a Roth IRA on steroids, in that you put the money in pre-tax, it grows tax-deferred, and you still get the money, pull the money out tax-free. It's literally allowing your money allocated for health expenses at some future time to be used completely tax-free. But there's more benefits than that. One, it's portable, so it's not completely linked to your employer. If you leave, you don't leave the money behind. If you don't use the money in this year, which is one of the problems with, say, a flexible spending account, it doesn't go away. It just keeps on compounding and growing, and you get to decide how those dollars are invested. It can be anywhere from a savings account all the way up to invested in various mutual funds in the stock market. So you can base your aggressiveness on how you grow that portfolio however you should choose. If you don't end up using the money, which I would suggest that most retirees could use this money for a whole host of things, particularly as the forecasts and estimates for retirees' expenditures for health-related illness in retirement is up in the $300,000-plus range, I would be willing to bet that you're going to end up utilizing this for some health-related concern. But if you don't, as soon as you turn 65, it's no different than having an IRA. You put the money in pre-tax. It's grown tax-deferred. The money that you pull out will be taxable, but that's the same way your 401k works. So a lot of people are using this as a way to supplement their retirement. If I need it for health-related reasons, great. If I don't, well, now I've just bolstered my health, my retirement savings, because I'm allowed as a family, for example, to put in over $7,000 a year, where I'm limited on my 401k. If I want to go beyond that, I can do this as well. So it's two birds with one stone. It's a great way to pay for your co-pays, et cetera, on a pre-tax basis. And if you don't use it, you get to use it for your retirement. It is a drastically underutilized resource for people that can afford it. I highly recommend that everybody look into it.
Can you use gym memberships with this?
You know, that's a good question. I don't believe that you can, but they've been waffling back and forth on that. I'd have to look it up online. But there's a whole host of things that you can use it for, and it changes every year. But it's a pretty robust list.
So I've always heard a lot of misinformation that if you don't use it with the year, you lose it. So that's a flex spending account.
That's not true. That is a flexible spending account, and those have been around for a long, long time. Now, there are some criteria. You know, a health savings account, you can only have if you have what's called a high deductible plan, which used to be difficult to achieve because so many people had great plans with really low deductibles. But if you've worked, you know, everybody that's out there listening and working goes, aren't all plans high deductible at this point? Pretty much. Almost everybody meets the criteria now because it's so hard to find low, low deductible plans. So you probably qualify for one as well.
Okay. And then just to reiterate, if you take the money out before 65, it gets taxed at 20%. If you take the money out after 65, it's taxed as ordinary income with no penalty if you don't use it to pay for medical services.
Correct. So if you're under the age of 65, which is kind of unique, Diane, in that an IRA, for example, is pre-59 and a half. You know, they had to be unique on this one and say 65. If you pull the money out pre-65, you get hit with a 20% penalty plus you pay ordinary income tax. So it's much like if you think about an IRA or 401k, if you pull money out pre-59 and a half, you get hit with a 10% penalty plus ordinary income. But as long as you wait until after 65, then it's just ordinary income, just like an IRA, et cetera. But again, if you use it for qualified medical expenses, then it's completely tax-free, no penalty, no nothing.
You can take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge and get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Just schedule a 15-minute call with Josh, and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support the local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. That is spelled aptuswealth.com. And with the Aptus Blueprint Challenge, it does work best with portfolios of $250,000 and up. There is a limit of one per household. You're listening to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. When we come back, more on the effects of COVID-19.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome Welcome back to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. New study is out, Josh. It says people aren't concerned about themselves so much because of COVID, but they are more concerned about their children financially. What advice do you have for your clients struggling with that?
Well, there's no question, and we talked about this, you know, just a couple of segments ago here, is that it's hitting younger families a lot harder than retirees. Again, retirees are, in fact, retired. They have, various sources of income. They have not been displaced via work because they're already done working. Matter of fact, I've had a lot of clients come in and go, I got a stimulus check. Why should I get a stimulus check? I'm retired. My income hasn't changed at all. I live on Social Security and a pension, which hasn't been affected at all. Why am I getting a stimulus check? So for many retirees, it's actually life's almost gotten better financially. While it's gotten worse in our ability to go out and do things, it's gotten almost better financially. So the burden for a lot of people is back on, how do I help my kids? And, you know, I've seen stats upwards of 25 million people have already helped out their adult children as a result of COVID. I've seen other stats that say that 7 in 10 retirees say they're willing to live worse to help their kids through retirement as a result of what's going on.
Well, I want to be adopted by that family, because that is definitely not my parents.
Right, mine either. But I think the takeaway here is, while the family unit should be strong, and we certainly want to help those that are in our clan and make sure that everybody's provided for, we don't want to do it at the severe jeopardy to ourselves and our retirement in the long run. And what I mean by that is, while your kids may be struggling, and I'm not telling you not to help them, you certainly don't want to help them at your own detriment, because they have a longer runway. They can go back to work. They can, if they have to dip into their retirement and savings accounts, they have time to replenish it. But if you're 75 years old and you're bleeding your own retirement account dry to help that younger family member, you don't have the ability to recoup those dollars more than likely to sustain your own life for the remainder of your life. So do you feel free. It's your money. It's your family. Help as you wish, but be very cautious and careful not to do it at the long-term detriment of your own financial situation, particularly not to the detriment of the point where you can't recover. So if you're willing to take a slight pullback in your style of, or your lifestyle to help a kid, great, but not at the detriment of not being able to pay your own electric bill 5-6 years from now.
That's a difficult conversation to have with clients, isn't it?
It's
touchy.
It's very easy as you, this is the conversation I typically hear. You know, I've lived a great life. My house is paid off. I'm doing well. It's very easy for me. You know, I'm not going out to eat. I'm not really spending any money. And here's my child who's got 2 or 3 kids. You know, he lost his job or she lost her job, and now they're really, really struggling. I want to help them. And that's great. And many of my clients are in a position to do so. And by all means, do it. But at the same token, I have other clients where their children are not saving the way they should. They did not prepare themselves at all. And the parents are not in a tremendously great financial situation where they can, you know, they don't have an extra $500 a month to dump towards their kids, or they're going to end up really hurting themselves in the long run. And in that scenario, it becomes very, very difficult. It's a difficult conversation. I understand the heartstrings. I understand everything involved. It's not my job to tell them what to do, but it's my job to tell them what that scenario looks like and what the potential consequences are, and then they get to live with what they choose.
If you'd like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion on how you're doing. In return, he'll give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. This brings up a good conversation about how much should you tell your children you have, in case you have children that aren't saving enough and kind of relying on, their parents' money. And I know a lot of people are concerned about, they've done a great job of saving, they've done all the right things, and then they're worried about the next generation blowing their money.
You know, and you would think that the apple, you know, the old adage, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. You would think that if you were a parent and you were very fiscally responsible, You had acquired quite a nest egg, and you had done everything, quote unquote, pretty darn right, that your kids will do the same. And that's just simply not the case. I've tried over the last 20 plus years to try and figure out, because I have kids, you know, what do certain parents do that make their kids so fiscally responsible? And while there are some definite
land,
things
land
that
the
you
helicopter
can,
first, land
yeah,
the helicopter.
I mean, it's while there are certain things that you can use and assimilate and try and do your best with, some of it is, it seems to me to be just complete and utter happenstance. So what do you tell them? I think it's an individual, you know, situation. Many kids, you can tell them everything. Other kids, you're right. You're going to actually thwart their own growth and their own career, and you're going to thwart their own confidence by knowing that they can stand on their own 2 feet and save money the way they need to by giving them the safety net fallback. So it's an individual scenario, Diane. I don't have a steadfast answer for you.
Just speaking in terms of generations, so according to Kiplinger, $68 trillion is the amount that is projected will transfer from baby boomers to Gen X. Mm-hmm. Gen X stands to be the primary beneficiary. And we know the difference between Gen X and millennials. You can see the difference in those generations. I mean, millennials are said to be the most fiscally responsible, but also may be a little bit different in work ethic compared to Gen X. What are your thoughts on that? And please tell me you're not a millennial.
I'm not a millennial. I'm a Gen Xer. Pretty solid right in the Gen X category. You know, I think every generation obviously has its changes. And oftentimes, and I think we all fall victim to this, where we say, you know, when I was a kid, and, you know, these new generations, they just don't get it. And There's really good people in every generation who are doing the right things, but they do certainly, in my opinion, in meeting with all of these categories, they do view the world a little bit differently. And, you know, while I think the baby boomers are going to drop $68 trillion, you better have some good conversations with your kids. I don't care what category they're in. You better talk to them about expectations, get to learn your kids, understand how your kids are handling their money, because that'll give you a path on how you should leave them those funds. So if you think you're just going to, you know, set up a will and drop $2 million in your kid's lap, if you're fortunate enough to have that sum of money, and your kids are just going to know the right thing to do with it, I mean, even if your kids are really, really fiscally responsible and are doing all of the right things, that windfall of money typically does not go well. So have the conversation about what you think they should do with the money, what you'd like to see done with the money, how they should manage the money. And then through those conversations, determine, do you want to have any control from the grave? And what I mean by that is, if you have a will, it just says how the money goes. If you have beneficiaries, it says how the money goes. I would like to leave 50% to kid one and 50% to kid two. And they just get lump sums and that's it. Or do you want to have more control than that? In other words, kid number one, very fiscally responsible. He's going to do the right thing for sure. Kid number two, not so much. Has not made the best decisions, and certainly left with that amount of money would probably screw it up. I would like to control how they receive it. And you can easily do that in the way of a trust. Now, there's some downsides to trust, but there's definite upsides as well. And the biggest upside is I can determine how my kids receive that money. For example, Diane, I have a trust, and I have a trust because if something were to happen to my wife and I, we have three children. And while the person that I would have raise my children, if something happened to both of us, I think would be great at raising my children, maybe not so great in the fiscal responsibility realm. So I have a trust that dictates how that money gets paid out to make sure that that money will in fact last the appropriate amount of time and provide a legacy, once I pass. You have the ability to do these things, but it all involves planning, and it all involves good conversations, and it also involves, quite frankly, just asking the right questions and knowing the right tools to use to accomplish what you want to do, which is where my office comes into play. We do this type of stuff all the time, and everybody's wishes are different. So while we have a whole pile of tools, and I hear often people come in and say, I want to trust, that might not be the right solution for you. Or I'd really like to do this or that or this. It's my job to help you navigate the labyrinth of here's all of the choices of tools that you could utilize, but what's the best one to accomplish what you want to do? And many times, obviously, as we're talking about trust, that involves, you know, an attorney, which I can speak their language pretty clearly. I've been doing it a really long time, and I have a great, network of attorneys or you can use your own. But let's find out what makes the most sense for you and then see if we even need to involve that person.
The number to call is 614-364-7300. If you have questions for Josh, 614-364-7300. Are you of the opinion that people should tell their children how much they're going to get, or should they keep that quiet and let the children, you know, accumulate their own wealth and savings?
You know, I think, again, it comes down to individuals. I think there's one thing that's absolutely true. Regardless of the amount that you're going to leave your children, it's important to discuss with them how to be fiscally responsible with whatever they receive. It's important to talk to them about and educate them about money, because the reality is, and there's people that write books about this all the time, we are not learning about money in school. We learn about a lot of things, science, math, music, all literature, all these different things. And then you go to college, and if you go to a liberal arts college, you learn about your particular degree and you learn about a lot of advanced things. But many times you don't learn about, you know, if you're an English major, you probably don't spend a lot of time in the finance classroom learning about, if somebody left me $2 million, what would I do with it? So I think it's important that you involve your kids as much as possible in educating them and giving them a financial literacy. Whether you choose to tell them how much the money will be, that's completely up to you. But they need to be equipped, at least reasonably, with a pathway on how to handle that scenario. Even if it's simply call this person and listen to everything they have to say, or let's really, you know, go, let's dive in deep. Let's learn about what's the difference between a stock and a bond and a mutual fund and how do taxes work. It's up to your comfort level. But the shocking reality is only about 40% of parents are confident that their children will be good stewards of their money. So 60% of people believe that although they've worked hard, saved all this money, and they're going to leave it to their kids because that's where they want it to go, 60% of them believe their kids are going to do a terrible job with it. So something has to change. That comes through financial literacy, it comes through education, and it comes through planning. And I'm happy to help with that process with all my clients.
We invite you also to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge if you're not a client of Josh's, just so you can get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, just to see how you're doing. Schedule a 15-minute call with Josh, and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support our local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300. Again, the number is 614-364-7300. This works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up, and there is a limit of one per household. Of course, if you would like to call Josh with any questions on this show, please do so. The number again is 614-364-7300. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about picking between a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer. Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, let's talk about factors that people need to consider when looking at a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA.
First, let's go over real quickly again what the difference is. A traditional IRA, you put in money pre-tax. It grows tax deferred. But when you pull that money out, it will be included in your taxable income. So the benefit of a traditional IRA is I get to save the tax dollars that I would spend on the money today that then in turn grow and get compound interest, hopefully, if our investments do well. But then when I pull that money back out, I will end up paying taxes in whatever bracket I'm in at that time. A Roth IRA, in turn, I do not get the benefit of tax savings today because I put in after-tax dollars. But then it grows tax-deferred as well. But every dollar I pull out is tax-free, so it does not go into the taxable equation at all. Now, which one you should choose is some very easy math and some kind of science and guesswork. And what I mean by that is the objective of a traditional IRA, or the concept and why it was constructed, is while I'm working and earning dollars, I'm probably at a higher tax bracket than I'll be when I retire. So for example, let's say I'm working and I make $100,000 a year and I'm in the 22% bracket. Well, I save 22% in every dollar I put in. So if I put it in a Roth, I'd only be putting in $78. But I put it in a traditional IRA, I put in $100. But my idea is that when I retire, I'll be in a lower tax bracket because I won't be living off of $100,000. I'll be living off of a fraction of that. So that's the idea. The big question, though, is what will tax brackets look like in the future? And very rarely do I have anybody in my office that says they believe with the amount of debt that we're taking on with COVID, with list goes on and on over how our spending is careening out of control. Nobody seems to believe that tax rates are going down. Also, most people don't believe that they're going to need a significantly less amount in retirement. So the theory is, well, maybe my tax rate will be higher, so I'm better off putting in money post-tax in a Roth IRA, knowing that I'll never have to pay taxes on that again, no matter what happens to the tax rates. And that's a very fair argument. I think if you want to combine the two and say, well, I don't want to give up the benefit today for a potential benefit tomorrow, I'd like to kind of play both sides of the fence here. You do some a little bit more math. Let's take that same person and say they're in the $100,000 income range. And I'm going to use numbers that aren't actually accurate here, but it'll be easy math. Let's say that the 22% bracket starts at 90,000, which it doesn't, but let's say that it did. Well, maybe I put in $10,000 into my 401k or IRA or whatever tax-deferred vehicle that I utilize. I put $10,000 in to drop below that threshold, knowing that the remainder of my money is now in the 12% bracket. So I've saved 22% up front. And then whatever I save beyond that, I'm going to put in a Roth IRA because I believe that paying 12% today is not that unreasonable to have tax-free income later. So you start to do some math of splitting it. The other thing that is important to note is how long will I have this money left in there before I need it? For example, if you're 60 years old and you say, I'm going to do a Roth, but I need the money in 4 years, well, you have to keep the money in there for a period of time for it to be tax-free. And what will the benefit be if I only leave the money in there for 4 or 5 years? I'm only saving on the gains. So there's a bunch of different ways to slice this, but I think, you know, my opinion, as we look forward, is clearly if you're in the top tax bracket, it would be a very difficult argument to say that you should not do a traditional to the fullest degree because you're already in the top tax bracket. However, and by traditional, I'm saying 401k, because if you're in the top tax bracket, you don't qualify for a traditional anyway, unless you don't have a 401k. But if you start dropping below that, then it's a very significant argument, one could say, that a tradition or a Roth IRA has huge validity because of a myriad of other reasons, meaning that not only am I saving the taxes down the line on every dollar I withdraw, meaning I don't pay any taxes, but that also is not going to impact how much of my Social Security income is taxed, because Social Security, as it exists today, is taxed based upon your outside taxable income. So your traditional IRA withdrawal can not only be taxed, but it affects how much your Social Security can become taxed. So like many of the answers that I'm always offering up here, and I know that everybody would really like to hear that silver bullet where this is the perfect answer, it depends on your individual situation of how much income you have, what your retirement goals are, what your Social Security is going to look like. But even at that, it's still math coupled with science, because we'll ultimately have to come back to what do you think tax rates are going to look like? And once you've come up with what you think they're going to look like, now we can come back to the math and I can give you a very legitimate answer. But we just don't know what the future holds. But if you're young, it's very hard to argue against a Roth. As you get older, the decision becomes more individualized.
And what's older? Like over 40, over 50?
Yeah, I would say once you crest that 50, 55 mark, then the math starts to get a little bit closer depending upon your situation. But it would be so difficult to argue against. Let's say you're 25 years old and you're saving, you know, $1,000 a year. So over the next 40 years, you're going to save $40,000. But it's not unreasonable to assume that $40,000 isn't going to be worth hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars by the time you're 65. So you put in 40 after tax, you pay tax on 40, and you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of gains that you'll never pay taxes on. That argument is very, very difficult mathematically to beat. But if you only have 5 or 6 years or 10 years worth of growth, well, then those numbers start getting tighter depending upon your individual situation, tax rates, what other assets you have, what your retirement picture looks like. But you have to do the math. It is no, you should do a Roth because it's better than a traditional. It depends. It depends on your scenario. And it isn't always better. But that's what I hear all the time. Always do a Roth, always do a Roth. Not always. You have to do math first.
If you have questions or you would like to a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion. In return, he'll give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. Josh, we're getting a lot of questions about the 60-40 rule. For those that missed it, can we go over that again? People are asking if it makes sense during this these uncertain times with the pandemic that we're dealing with. And I know you've stated before, it didn't make sense before, correct?
Well, the 60-40 rule, let's first talk about what it is. And then we'll have to determine whether or not it makes sense moving forward based upon the factors that we're looking at today. The 60-40 rule is simply that if you invest 60% of your money in stocks and 40% of your money in bonds, risk adjusted, it's simply a better way to invest when you reach your retirement age. Meaning that rather than having 100% in stocks or 100% in bonds, if you have a 60% allocation of stocks and a 40% allocation of bonds, and you don't exceed, there was a very famous guy, Bill Bengen, I can never remember how he pronounces it, but back in 1994, he said, there's a safe max rule. As long as you don't withdraw more than 4%, you put your money in a 60-40 allocation, you'll never run out of money and adjust for inflation. Well, that had a lot of things going for it from 1994 until today. And mainly what it had going for it was interest rates effectively have gone down year over year for the last 25 years. So from 1994 till today, interest rates have steadily gone down. Matter of fact, they went down again during COVID, which if you would have told me 6 months ago that mortgage rates would be even lower than they were 6 months ago, I would have said you're crazy. But then insert COVID and here we are. When interest rates go down, bond prices go up. They're inversely proportional. So the ratio of 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds worked tremendously well because bonds never effectively were the anchor behind the boat. And the logic behind it is as stocks are affected by extreme volatility, bonds tend to do well. They're inversely proportional, just like bonds are inversely proportional with interest rates. So things aren't always going the same direction. And we saw this very, very clearly in 2008. In 2008, the stock market pulled back dramatically into 2009 during the financial crisis. Bonds, huge life raft in that boat. They propped up rates dramatically in your overall portfolio. So nothing illustrated it better as being a safer way to invest than in 2008. But what did they benefit from? Interest rates steadily went down through that whole time period. So it had a dramatically positive impact on bonds. But where are we now? Now, I'm not saying they can't go down anymore because I would have never believed they went down more than they were 6 months or a year ago. However, we are reaching a threshold where they can only go down so far. I just had a client in my office the other day said he got a 30-year mortgage at 2.75. Rates can only go so low. So there is a tipping point of bonds. And while they could benefit from demand of market volatility, people flocking out of the market to go to safety, to bonds, that could prop them up. It's certainly not going to be a really long-term fix, and it's not going to achieve your goals. So the big risk right now is, will that 60-40 work? Do I think bonds are going to go negative? No. Do I think that they're going to return very low rates of return? Well, if you look from 1950 to 1960, we're in a very gradual, steady interest rate increase environment, and bonds did abysmal. They returned less than 2% a year for a whole 10-year period. So if you believe that to be the case, and you're pulling out 4%, and you think that stock market volatility is here for good, and well, now you're faced with this situation that you have extreme stock market volatility, low protection in the bond market because it's essentially earning nothing, and you're trying to pull out 4%. Which is why you're seeing things like, is 4% still a reasonable number? Is it the death of the 4% rule? And I think the answer is no, it's not the death of the 4% rule, but we can't look at things that we look the exact same way we looked at before. And there's been a ton of studies. Dr. Wade Faugh out of the American College, who also runs, I believe it's called the New York Life Retirement Income Institute. Actually, Dr. Faugh was my professor when I was at the American College getting my RICP. He has a ton of research studies on what are alternatives that we should look at. And the crux of his research study was, one, using the equity in your home to be able to take a more aggressive position in stocks, adding stability through something called a HECM loan, which is new speak for utilizing a reverse mortgage. And the other thing that he addressed a lot was maximizing your Social Security and the utilization of annuities as opposed to bonds in its way to bolster the stock market performance but add longevity protection. So we have to take some different approaches. I think 60-40, although it's not dead, it's still a useful tool. I think there are much better ways over the next 10 or 20 years to accomplish the same objective that are much safer.
And I think the message here is what anyone reads on the internet that has been like a rule of thumb or to follow. I mean, we're in uncertain times, so everything's individualized. Everyone understands that times are changing and things can change quickly. It's definitely more important than ever to talk to a financial advisor and not believe these headlines.
I couldn't agree more.
We invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Just schedule a 15-minute call with Josh, and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support the local community. The number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. And this works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up. When we come back, more about changes you need to make now during this pandemic.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300. Or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, what are the biggest changes, if any, you have found people need to make with their retirement plans due to this coronavirus pandemic we're going through?
Well, of course, Diane, like we've been talking about the entire time we've been having this conversation, is it's individual, but be fluid, be open to changes. I've seen a lot of mistakes. For example, people retiring too soon, even though this pandemic has had a pretty significant impact on their retirement portfolio, meaning that they weren't with me. They did not take a position of stability through all of this. They did not have that. We talk oftentimes about the three-legged stool. They did not have multiple sources of income established. They did not have that security blanket wrapped around their retirement plan. They were just out there by themselves, and they had 100% of their money in the stock market, and it pulled back, and they got nervous, and they pulled out, and they decided, well, it's less money than I had before, but I'm going to retire anyway. You never want to retire when your situation looks incredibly, let's say, things are tight, meaning that we want to retire with as much of a surplus as we possibly can. And many times people get wrapped up around a number. I'm going to retire at 62 because that's what I want to do. Well, I appreciate the enthusiasm, but maybe 62 doesn't make sense. Maybe 63 or 64 makes sense. And people go, what difference can a year or two make? A significant difference, a dramatic difference, not only in your money's ability to grow more and your ability to save for another year or two, but also, if you think about it, the money has to provide for you for 1 or 2 years less. If you retire at 63 and you die in the same age as opposed to retiring at 61, obviously that's 2 years less worth of income draw with 2 years more worth of contributions more. So be open to not necessarily staying in your same exact career or your same exact job, but rather than pulling the ripcord and retiring fully, in times of uncertainty, it may make sense to work part-time for a couple of years just to help bolster or take the stress off of your retirement income. For the first couple of years, it could make a dramatic difference. The other thing that I think people really need to consider, and we've been touting this for over a decade, is maximizing your Social Security. While Social Security, you know, we have a lot of opinions and conversations about it, we don't need to talk about right now as to whether or not it'll be there and what will the changes be made, etc. As it exists today, Social Security between the ages of 66 and 70, your payment amount increases by 8%. So not only does it increase by 8%, but now all of your cost of living adjustments moving forward are up by 8%. And also, not 100% of your Social Security is taxable at any bracket. So it's a tax favorable income. So not maximizing your Social Security as a protection against longevity and as a way to bolster your retirement income, and at least not doing the analysis to whether or not it makes sense for you, is a huge mistake. You need to do that. The other one that I think we need to be very cautious of during times where all the news sounds bad, where we can't leave our houses, where we're amidst a pretty chaotic upcoming election season, there's a lot of bad stuff that we could point our finger to that would sometimes cause us to make some pretty hasty decisions. And while I'm not saying that now might not be the time to put some protection mechanisms in place to make sure that we limit some downside if, in fact, the market goes that way, it is not the time to pull all the money out of the market. It is not the time to completely revamp our entire retirement plan 180 degrees because we're scared. It's a time to be patient. It's a time to make logical decisions. But haste is definitely not the right method here. You know, what other things can we change? You know, this is a big one that I'm hearing a lot. Flat out giving up. I hear a lot of clients come in and they say, well, you know, my portfolio was on track and then it got pulled back and now it's climbed back up to where it is. But, you know, with the election coming, it's probably going to pull back again. And I don't even know if I want to save any money because I don't want to lose it. And, you know, I'll probably never be able to retire. And that general, you know, thought process and that general psyche really starts to tear into people. And I can see it in the way that they view the world. So don't give up. Keep on pushing forward. Keep on saving like you were before. Yes, of course, feel free to make adjustments, but make them conscious, logical adjustments. Seek outside counsel and help. Speak with me, speak with your attorney, speak with your tax professionals, speak with everybody to say what is a logical decision to make right now, and make sure you're not only speaking to people that are gloom and doom, because that'll just suck the life right out of you, but keep pushing forward. There will be opportunities. The future will be bright. But there will always be paths. You know, you're going to have to go through some darkness to get there sometimes. So don't give up. And Diane, shockingly, I hear that more and more in my office, this kind of just, you know, wah, wah, everything's terrible. It'll get better. We'll be fine. Keep pushing forward.
And historically, the market and investing, it has always been cyclical. Absolutely everything we deal with in life is cyclical. So when planning for your retirement and with your advisor, I mean, COVID was a big reminder that you have to plan for these things, for these ups and downs.
Yeah, and I think that you're absolutely right. But I think the big change that's occurred that I've seen in my 20-year career, 20-plus years, is the advent of social media and just the sheer volume of information that we're inundated with every single day. So it seems like although, you know, times are different, but they're the same, right? This time it's COVID. It was the financial crisis. Before that was the dot-com bubble. Before that, we can just keep going back. There's always going to be something, and it is always going to be cyclical. But man, we are slapped in the face with it. We see it on our phones that are in our hands. We get reminders on our phones. So it's in our pocket, and it buzzes and says, just so you know, things are still awful. You know, tune back later. And then you go home and you watch the news and it's awful. And then you're walking around the store and you have to wear a mask and that seems awful. And everything just seems so awful. But you're right, Diane, it's cyclical. So we have to plan for both outcomes here. And there are ways to do that. You need to set up a retirement plan that can weather all storms, that's prepared for the future no matter what it throws at us. That's exactly what you should be doing and exactly what we do every single day.
The number to call is 614-364-7300. If you have questions for Josh, 614-364-7300. And let's talk about the importance of including annuities in your retirement portfolio. I know we've discussed this before, but let's go over that again for people just joining the program.
Yeah, and like I had mentioned before, at the American College and the New York Life Retirement Income Institute, Dr. Wade Faw, spelled P-F-A-U, done a lot of research on this, and he's kind of known as the foremost in retirement income planning specifically. And he's brought back to light the importance of annuities. And it seemed like for a while, annuities were almost a dirty word because, you know, the stock market had been doing so well and interest rates were so low. But the annuity world, like the rest of the world, has changed. And there are some options that have provided us lifetime income streams with inflation adjustments. And one of the biggest challenges that we have today is how do we take out an income stream from a very volatile market how do we replace the bond component, at least to a certain percentage, because interest rates are not favorable for the bond market moving forward? And then how do we protect against this big, ugly monster that we call longevity? Great problem to have. We're living a lot longer, and we're retired a lot longer than we were before. But how do we protect against running out of money? And insurance companies in the annuity world came up with some solutions to that. They have given you ways to participate on a guaranteed basis in some upside potential of the stock market, and then even put that on steroids to be able to give yourself a lifetime income benefit that you can outlive, or you and your spouse can outlive, that also ratchets up for inflation. So effectively what that's done is take some of the stress off of the withdrawals of your stock positions by getting that income elsewhere, which points back to our old concept of three-legged stool. We need to have multiple sources of income. For a while, we've kind of resigned ourselves to, I have Social Security, and then I have my 401k that's invested in the stock and bond market. His contention is this: that makes sense, but let's maximize Social Security for our situation, minimizing taxes. Let's add a third leg to the stool in the form of an annuity to provide lifetime income. And then we still have our stock and bond portfolio, but it allows us, because we have these two other legs of the stool now as opposed to one, it allows us to take more risk should we need to in the stock market, providing longer or larger returns over the long run. So I think, you know, the takeaways here are the same that I've been touting for a long time, is whether you use annuities or other income streams, you need to have more than just Social Security and your stock market portfolio or stock and bond market portfolio. You need to have other income streams. And if you can get one that's going to provide income for the rest of your life that you can outlive on a guaranteed basis, backed by one of the greatest financial institutions in the world, by all means, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to me, and it makes a lot of sense to academia as well.
What age should you be when you start investing in annuities?
Yeah, we call it kind of once you get to that, the 20-yard line, you know, the 20-yard line drill, right? So once you get to in your 50s, you're planning on retiring in your 60s, it's a great time to start repositioning assets towards safety. It allows you to start, and it's kind of a sweet spot for annuities as well. You know, the best annuities in the marketplace right now tend to be on the deferred side, 10-year annuities. So if you're 55, you can grab that annuity, and by 65, it's ready to do its maximum benefit for you. But, you know, I think I've said on previous shows, Diane, I personally own one. So there's really no too early of a time. It depends on what your goals are and whether or not you have a pension, you have Social Security. What are your income sources, and do you want to diversify those in the future? But by the time you're in your 50s, you should at least be investigating the idea.
We're coming up to the end of the show here. I'm going to just throw something at you, a scenario. So let's say a person's done a terrible job of saving. They get an inheritance because their parents have been making good financial decisions, and they get an inheritance of $200,000, and they have not saved anything for retirement. What would your advice be? What would you tell them to do with that money?
Well, one, don't make any rash decisions. Don't do what a lot of people do and go buy a really flashy car, because that car will be gone in 5 years and so will the money. So step number one, I would say sit on it for a second, get comfortable with the fact that it's there, don't blow it. Secondly, consult a professional. Consult a couple of professionals, get second opinions, but start to utilize that money for your future. If you have not saved up to this point, it might be your saving grace. But there are some things that you need to do as well in a little bit more immediate fashion. And what I mean by that is, depending upon what the money was held in when it was left to you, whether it was in an IRA or non-qualified dollars or a house, there's some tax implications that you have to kind of take a look at and handle. So consult somebody whom you trust. If you don't know anybody whom you trust that's in our profession, then call my office, call somebody else, get some second opinions, and then come up with the plan that makes the most sense for you. But congratulations. This is a great opportunity to realize that you maybe haven't done a great job up to this point, but you got a lifeline. Now let's build on it, and let's make sure that it's invested right for you.
Thanks, everyone, so much for joining us for this week's edition of the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To learn strategies to manage risk and to schedule your own personalized planning session, or to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge, give Josh's office a call. The number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. Thanks again for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with host Josh Pick. Josh helps guide his clients through retirement by managing risk instead of chasing returns. He calls it a blueprint, and you can get started at no cost or obligation. Give the team at Aptus Wealth a call today to schedule your consultation at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. To learn strategies to manage risk in the new economy, join us again next weekend right here at 98.9 The Answer. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims-paying ability of the issuing company.